Coleman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. We are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. We are live at First Horizon Park. Sounds and Iowa Cubs tonight, 6:35 on Rick Sweet Bobblehead Stash Giveaway. Presented by Nobody Trashes TN on a winning Wednesday. You get a big Rick Sweet, the skipper, the bobblehead with the giant mustache. So, by the way, Shams Charania reporting that Jeannie Buss is selling the Lakers to some guy named Mark Walter. I don't know if I care about that, but interesting. So, last night I was watching a hockey game, and I'm not going to lie to you, it's kind of boring. Florida was kicking that ass. So, I'm sitting there just flipping through the channels, and the WNBA game is on. And if I say the WNBA game is on, you know what I mean by that. Reed, if I say, hey, Reed, the WNBA game is on, what am I really saying?
I have nothing else to do.
And?
I'm bored.
The Caitlin Clark game is on. So I clicked it. Because, you know, Caitlin is box office. Caitlin's legit. I watched Caitlin play in college. I've watched really a little here and there at WNBA if Caitlin's on. I said, okay, let's see. And as I tuned into the game, I saw this giant brouhaha at the end of the game. Debbie Antonelli, who was the NBA TV analyst yesterday. I have a lot of respect for Debbie. I've known Debbie for a long time. Debbie was sitting here talking about how embarrassing it was for the game and put it on the officials that we were having this big brouhaha at the end of the Connecticut Sun Indiana Fever game, which, again, people were watching because it was Caitlin Clark. And this all stems from Marina Mabry, just, again, out of nowhere, just cheap-shotting Caitlin Clark. It's embarrassing. And I said this on Monday. I said, I got to have a Jared Stillman sports lecture. And my sports lecture was, you WNBA bitter Betties, you old hats that are jealous of the attention that Caitlin Clark gets, get over yourself. Because she is the best thing that has ever happened to that league. The only thing you could argue is even that's better to, than Caitlin Clark for the WNBA is the NBA's backing of the WNBA. Other than that, the single biggest thing out there for that league in its 25, 30-year history is Caitlin Clark. You know when they say nobody's bigger than the game? Like they'll tell a baseball player, a basketball player, a football player, nobody's bigger than the game. That may not be the case with Caitlin Clark. And yesterday I talked about John Morant and how John Morant embracing the gun culture with the Instagrams and the celebrations and everything else damages Memphis's reputation by playing into the stereotype that people have in their head about Memphis. Well, the WNBA is doing a lot to hurt the progress of their sport and to highlight a lot of the things that, again, I don't believe in, but stereotypes about women when it comes to pettiness and jealousy. It's like, here is the number one women's sports league in the world. And there is one woman in that league who is an absolute superstar. And every time you turn on the TV, every story it feels like about the WNBA is about somebody going after Caitlin, somebody jealous of Caitlin, somebody talking about Caitlin, somebody like Angel Reese throwing a big fit. There were two people that brought people into watching women's basketball. No, there's one. And Caroline and I got into it last night because I sent out a tweet and I said, I mean, this league is just full of losers that cannot look at their lives, their careers as WNBA players have never been more relevant than they are today because of Caitlin Clark. And this league is going to see prosperity because she brings 2 million people to the television set to watch her play and sells out every arena she goes to. She's going to bring a level of prosperity for that league that it has never seen before. And these Marina Mabry losers cannot get over themselves and accept it and be happy with it. Instead, they take cheap shots at her because they're jealous. And Caroline got on me and said that it was sexist for me to say that. And I said, what are you talking about? We talk about jealousy in men's sports all the time. Isaiah Thomas and his jealousness of Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen and his anger with The Last Dance, Shaq and Kobe and the fact that their egos and jealousy got in between them. Terrell Owens, we talk about jealousy and pettiness in men's sports all the time. This is not exclusive to just talking about women's sports. And I heard today Monica McNutt, who, by the way, speaking of brouhahas in women's basketball, I was involved in one years and years and years ago. And Monica McNutt was involved in the same brouhaha. She was playing at Georgetown. I was working at Louisville. We had a big fight. I had to go in there and do some restraining, like Steve Wilkos on the Jerry Springer Show. And there's just a lot of men out there that don't take women seriously. And I do. Like, I think women can be in power. I think women can own teams. When people say, well, I don't think a woman should own a team with Amy Adams Strong, I point to Sheila Ford-Hamp and I say she's doing a great job. But when you've got the most popular women's sport in the country, and every game that this one gravitational star plays in, there's always someone out there to knock her block off because she's not because she's dirty and plays the game that way, not because she doesn't play the game the right way, not because she isn't deserving of the attention, but simply because of the jealousy of the attention that this woman gets. You're hurting your sport. And I wouldn't just say you're hurting your sport. You're hurting women everywhere. Again, this plays into the stereotype of, oh, they're jealous. Oh, they're petty. Again, Monica McNutt this morning when Mad Dog and Stephen A. were talking about this, she was like, I'm glad you two didn't say jealousy because if I heard jealousy, I was going to jump off the set. That's what this is, Monica McNutt. Again, when Ja Morant fully embraces gun culture to the point that he gets suspended, you're highlighting the bad reputation of Memphis. You're making people think, and again, we played the cuts from Memphis Radio crying about what Stephen A. Smith said's not true. But when Ja Morant, the most famous guy in Memphis, fully embraces the gun culture, you are making people believe, whether or not it's true, that this is what Memphis is about. When you're a women's basketball player in the WNBA and you can't smell the coffee about just how great this woman, Caitlin Clark, is for your league, you're just playing into the belief that some people have that women are too jealous to be taken seriously, and that is ridiculous. So why do things that then will lead people to believe things that are not true? And I hate this. I hate it for women. I hate it for women's sports. I hate it for the WNBA. But I got to be honest, it does feel like every freaking game there is some sort of tussle because someone is mad at Caitlin Clark. And I have to ask, what are you mad at Caitlin Clark for? People are like, well, she talks trash. Well, a lot of people talk trash and they don't fight. What are you mad at Caitlin Clark for? And the answer is they're mad that every single person that bought a ticket last night bought a ticket to go watch her play. They're mad that everybody that has turned on the TV has turned it on to watch Caitlin Clark play. And if you're Marina Mabry, the only way you get anybody to talk about you is in that game where 2 million people are watching Caitlin Clark play, you got a cheap shotter. It's a joke. It's a joke. And the WNBA needs to address this, and it needs to be over with. The WNBA needs to address their officials, who, by the way, are terrible. They need to address it with the players, who, again, I'm sure there are some of them out there that stand up for Caitlin Clark. But it feels like she's Michael Jordan and the entire league is the bad boy Detroit Pistons. And they need to address it with the coaches. And it needs to be done. You take a shot at Caitlin, technical foul. Take another one, technical foul, hit the showers. Let Caitlin do her thing. This is the WNBA. You're more popular than you've ever been. You don't need to turn into the Jerry Springer Show every time Caitlin plays a game. It's okay. We're there to watch the half-court shots. We're not there to watch the fights. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number. And I have a theory. I have a theory on the WNBA. And it's a theory that disappoints me with what I'm seeing right now in all of this. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, 1025, 1063, the game.
Golson had it knocked away. Good hands by Allen. And Sheldon comes up with the steal. Sheldon going coast to coast. And here we got another break is here as J.C. Sheldon goes right after Sophie Cunningham. It was a hard foul, no question.
I'm blaming this all on the officials tonight. It is totally their responsibility. That's a hard foul. That's a flagrant foul. And if they had taken care of the business earlier, we wouldn't be in this situation right now. Well, you can't eject her because you didn't eject Mabry. That's a flagrant foul. It's a hard foul. You could say it's a play on the ball, but...
Yeah, I think no question this will get upgraded.
Yeah, no question.
Two arms above the shoulders. And again, intent is not part of this rule. Cunningham.
It's the security that are getting in to break it up, not the officials.
That's Andy Arnold down there, who does a terrific job on the facility side. Trying to break up the action. New York, by the way, has won a final.
Sorry. There should be no handshaking after this game. You both go to the locker room and that's it.
Yeah, I think that's probably a safe bet.
Hey, don't you shake hands here in the WNBA. So, again, my favorite part right there, Debbie Antonelli, boy, she tells it like it is on that broadcast. And Debbie Antonelli sitting there and she's like, you know what? They've got security breaking up this WNBA fight, not even the officials because they did such a bad job. I have a theory on the WNBA, and then we'll get to your phones. And I find this to be crazy. My theory on the my theory with the WNBA is this. Some of these players in the WNBA rather be irrelevant and poor than relevant and rich if they have to accept Caitlin Clark as their superstar. That they'd rather play in the empty arenas that the WNBA had. I don't know if I told this story here or on Sirius XM, but years ago, Angel McCautry was the number one pick to the Atlanta Dream in the WNBA draft. Angel was on the team at Louisville when I was there. We're close friends. Angel invited me to the game. I was in town to watch the Braves. I went to the game, and I am telling you, I was nodding off during the game. There was nobody there. You know when they drop those little parachutes from the top of the arena? I mean, I ended up getting one, not because I, you know, was sitting there where it came right to me, or not because I ran to one or whatever, because there were so many that fell from the sky and there were so few people in the stadium. And so I am convinced that there are women in this league that would prefer it goes back to the way it was, when nobody cared about the WNBA, when nobody talked about the WNBA, when nobody watched the WNBA, and they were completely irrelevant. Than now, where, again, they're getting 2 million people to view a game. And that's a shame. That is a real poor reflection of self-awareness and character. That would be like if Howard Stern were to come to Nashville radio. And so now Howard Stern's going to be on the radio, and he's going to make Howard Stern money. And now everybody else, when they go in, if they beat Howard Stern, if they can go in and they can ask for Howard Stern money. Well, if Howard Stern comes to Nashville, Howard Stern's going to get all the attention. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it for what it would do for me. That's like Stephen A. Smith going to Mad Dog Radio and me filling in. You know, a couple weeks ago there was some big drama, you know, between the show that they had and the show that they're going to have with Stephen A. Smith. And I've been doing a lot of filling in. And I'm like, man, like, I'm filling in on Stephen A. Smith's show. That means something. Like, you're in Caitlin Clark's league. That means something. And they can't handle it. Again, it's not everybody, but it's the bad actors that make themselves the story in the WNBA. Andrew says, this is not made up or racist. Oh, great. If Caitlin was African-American, she would be celebrated and shoved down our throats. So I don't believe in this whole racism angle to the Caitlin Clark thing, simply because I think this is pure unadulterated jealousy. And we've had unadulterated jealousy for millennia and eons. And it doesn't matter if you're white, black, Hispanic, Asian, whatever. It doesn't matter. People have been jealous. Shaq and Kobe had jealousy issues. I mean, what's a Pippen and Jordan had jealousy issues. Caleb says they are biting the mouth that is finally starting to feed them, and for some reason, they hate it.
It's really hard to bite a mouth.
Yeah, they're biting the hand, I guess would be what you would say. One texter says, I saw a former NHL player asked why Gretzky didn't get hit as much as other players, and he said they were smart enough not to injure the guy that was making the league more popular and making them more money. Ding, 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 ding. By the way, one texter into the text line is really mad about the Predators trading for Eric Halla. I've got some thoughts on it. It's just not worth me. You know, it's not a big move. I'll explain what I think about it here at some point, but David says, I hope we don't get a WNBA here. Why would you care if we get a WNBA team? Like, they're not building an arena for a WNBA team. So if you don't like the WNBA, don't watch. I would love for us to get a WNBA team. Again, you mean to tell me you don't want Caitlin Clark coming here 2-3 times a year? The other ones, I'm not sure I'd pay that much attention to. But one texter says, Jared, stop acting like Caitlin Clark is the goddess of women's basketball and not give Angel Reese her praise. I'm guessing that is facetious. Boy, Angel Reese must be mad. There was a game that Caitlin Clark played in yesterday that everybody's talking about because somebody else hit Caitlin Clark, and Angel Reese can't say that the story is equally about her as it is Caitlin Clark, which is the way that she feels.
But there's one person who can end this instantly, and it's Caitlin Clark.
By doing what?
By standing up for yourself.
By punching back?
Punching back. You take your suspension, you take your fine, and it doesn't happen again.
So you're telling me that the next time somebody cheap shots Caitlin, which is going to happen because they keep cheap shotting her, she should just turn around and just
yes.
Boom.
Yes.
You know, I'm not saying she should do it. I'm not saying that's crazy. You know, Michael Jordan needed Charles Oakley to kind of be that guy for him. Maybe Caitlin needs somebody. But if you want to say, hey, Caitlin, just get up and boom, just pop somebody. Boy, that would be a story. But would that hurt her brand too much to do that?
No, I don't think so. Because I think the people who are all in on Caitlin Clark are tired of seeing it happening. And no one's, I mean, Sophie Cunningham took a shot last night after this whole thing, you know, played out the way it did, but I don't think that's something that she's going to, I don't see Sophie Cunningham becoming the enforcer for Caitlin Clark.
No, but I do like Sophie Cunningham.
There you go. I knew you were going to go there.
I do like Sophie Cunningham. Matthew in Nashville says, you're right, Jared. The other players are 100% jealous of Caitlin. It makes no sense because she's brought so many eyes and ratings to the WNBA. Angel Reese and company would rather be irrelevant and not turn a profit like the league has for 30 years, ignoring that Caitlin in the league might actually turn a profit. You know what's crazy? Again, I have to go back and listen to it. I was watching First Take today because I wanted to hear what Stephen A. had to say about Memphis after what he said yesterday. And I just kept it going. And I like Monica McNutt. You know, Monica McNutt and I talked at the Super Bowl, and we kind of reminisced about that big fight between Louisville and Georgetown when we were both in college. And today she was like on TV. She was just like, if one of you two had said jealous, I would have lost my mind. And I'm like, how can you not see this as jealousy? How can you see this as anything else? To me, there's no other explanation for it. Interesting, though, Reed wants, you know, a nice little pop from Caitlin Clark. I'm not going to say I'm against it. 615-737-1025. Fitz will join us coming up next. We're live at First Horizon Park, where once again the Sounds take on the Iowa Cubs. 6:35 is the first pitch on Rick Sweet Bobblehead Stash Giveaway Night. Get excited about that. Stillman and Company, 1025, 1063, the game.
He was being protective of the city, just like the mayor was being protective of the city. I want to be protective of the cities because I love my peeps. And the bottom line is that I think the citizens in Memphis, I think a lot better can be done for them. And Ja Morant staying put and being the galvanizing force that he can be, I think will assist in that. That's what I was trying to say. I apologize if anybody was offended by it, but facts are facts. There are concerns in that city, and as a black man in this country who cares about my peeps, I'll be damned if I'm going to be silent when all of these troubles are taking place, although things appear to be getting better statistically anyway.
There you go. That was Stephen A. Smith. He was doubling down on his NBA players don't feel safe in Memphis. I don't want to say take, but report slash take. Yesterday on First Take, Jason Fitz joins us now in the program. Ja Morant got mad. The mayor got mad. Chris Vernon got mad. The city of Memphis got mad. Fitz, I have to ask, was Stephen A. out of line? And do you believe what Stephen A. Smith said was true, which is NBA players tell him that they don't feel safe in Memphis, so they don't want to play for the Grizzlies?
No, I don't. But I just look, I say this gently. I mean, I've done a weekly hit with the Memphis ESPN radio station since I started my career at 102.5 The Game how many years ago. So I have a lot of love for that station. I talked to them about this yesterday. I think people forget the way that Stephen A. gets rich. And I just, to be brutally honest with you, you look at the amount of hours of content a day that Stephen A. makes. And when you make as many hours of content a day, you simply cannot and do not watch games. My argument has always been, to throw myself under the bus before I throw Stephen A. under the bus. There was one time when I was at ESPN, I was sitting on radio. I got a text from one of the bosses, and they said, we need you to host a WNBA show tonight. And I text back and said, man, I haven't watched a W game all year. I don't even know who's where. And the response I got was, doesn't matter. I need a butt in the seat. We have to understand that at some point, the way ESPN works, and it worked for me, it helped build my life, is they get as much squeeze out of the juice as they possibly can. That's the way they do business. So having said that, Stephen A. doesn't watch any Memphis basketball. So now that you know that, acknowledge that the way that Stephen A. gets out of having to have a nuts and bolts conversation when he's not comfortable with nuts and bolts is by finding whatever soap opera he can link to and creating that out of it. That's what Stephen A. was doing. I genuinely believe, and look, he makes more money in a day than I make in a year. He's far more successful than I am. I acknowledge all of these things. I believe that if you had given a flashcard a week ago and asked him where Desmond Bane played, he would not have known the answer to that. So when you have to have a take on something and you just don't know what else to talk about, you go with whatever the biggest stereotype is. This same man that a few years ago told everybody that Memphis is all about Elvis, which speaks to the fact that he hasn't spent much time in Memphis lately. So, like, Stephen A. takes whatever he thinks is going to be a big statement and makes it. And then he never walks it back, never apologizes. But the dude just doesn't watch sports. So he simply can't have a great opinion on everything. And I think yet again, he got caught in that with Memphis. And now he's just chasing his tail until we all forget about it with the next controversy.
So you don't think that players told him that they don't feel safe in Memphis? Because to me, I think if Stephen A's telling the truth and players have said, you know, when they talk about, well, what about here? What about there? Well, what about Memphis? And they've said, oh no, Stephen A, we don't want to go there. If he's telling the truth, I don't have a problem with it. If he's not telling the truth, then I think Memphis has a legitimate gripe.
Let me ask you this. Why would it come up? If you're sitting there with any player in the NBA right now and you're Stephen A, why would you even bring up Memphis as a place for people to play? It doesn't, like, it's not coming up casually in a conversation. Like, I've had the opportunity over the last 2 years with Yahoo to work with Danny Green and the Morris Brothers Bull. And we talked about different teams. We talked about different the process around the league. I sat with all of them. And we just, you know, you're just shooting the shoot. You know what I mean? You're just hanging out, having a little conversation. I can't remember ever having a reason that Memphis would come up. So do we believe that Stephen A. was suddenly hammering his phone after the Desmond Bane trade to figure out if people want to play in Memphis? I just don't I don't believe that. Somebody told me the story 2 days ago, and I won't tell who they are because I don't want them to get in trouble. But they work at ESPN, and they were at a game this year where Stephen A. was on the halftime show. And the story I got was...
Whoa. Start over. Is this talent? Is this production staff?
It's talent. It's a talent. It's a talent that's on air. And they were in the dressing room area, like the green room area where talent sits to watch the first half. They were in the first half the whole time. And the way it was told to me was Stephen A. spent the entire first half eating pot pies, walking around with his face in his phone. And then 5 minutes before the half, somebody handed him the box score to where we were. He looked at it. He yelled something about Anthony Davis, and then he just went out and did the halftime show. Didn't watch a minute of it on the TV. What Stephen A. is great at is that. That's why he's rich, right? He's great at just like, I'm just going to yell about something, and everybody clicks on it. So it makes the company a ton of money, and it makes him a ton of money. But the solitaire thing is real. Like, I don't think he's sitting here working his phone to sit there and say, okay, is anyone going to play in Memphis? Why is Desmond Bane out? What does it mean for the future of Jared Jackson Jr.? What's it mean? Should they extend Ja? Like, he's not having those conversations. It doesn't matter to him. He spends every ounce of his effort making content. And I don't understand why we're surprised that somebody that is on air hours and hours and hours a day also isn't really doing much to work the phones or the angles or watch the games. Like, how does he have time to make political shows and a radio show now with SiriusXM that he's going to be making and, you know, First Take and all the things he does that he has? He's got a private researcher on staff with him that he pays out of his pocket just to make sure he actually knows the names and box scores of the games, and he still gets that wrong. Like, the devil is in the details, and Stephen A. never gets those right, but we still continue to build up his platform.
Man, Fitz is letting it air out today. Okay, I will say if Stephen A. made it up, I have a problem with it if he made it up.
I have no reason to believe. And look, again, for everyone listening, like, if Stephen A. hears this tomorrow, like, I have sat in the room with the man, and he has no idea who I am. Like, I am the first to acknowledge I am small potatoes, and he is the whole potato farm. I realize that. Like, so, y'all, it's not lost on me that Stephen A. is rich and powerful for a reason, and I am neither of those things for a reason. Like, he is the best of the best at what he does, but he is the modern Ringling Brothers. Like, he's the greatest showman. There's no substance to it. There's no actual work behind it. The work he puts into it is the effort he puts in to being absolutely, you know, dynamic on air. And just to put a bow on my Stephen A. experience, when ESPN launched the horrible First Take, Your Take show that I was honored to get to host, the first day that replaced Stephen A.'s show on radio every day. And I sat in the studio with him on the last day of his show, which was the first day. It was the handoff. We were in the studio together for 3 hours. And I sat there and I looked at him. And when I first sat down and I was like, Stephen A., man, this is such an honor to get to take this time slot, midday ESPN. My name is going to be on it. We'll react to First Take, man. I'm honored that I get to do this. And he looked at me flatly and said, man, there's no money in radio. And if there's no money in something, don't do it. That was his comment. Now, he's about to go back to radio because there's money in it for him. But, like, if you understand that none of it is about, like, fall in love with the process is not Stephen A.'s model. Fall in love with whatever's going to get you the most eyeballs, the most attention, the most clicks. And you don't get that by being a really smart analyst in the modern society. You get that by saying something that everybody reacts to and then buckling down on it like you're a child that's been found in a lie, but you don't care. And it works for him. So, like, I realize that he could squash me faster than I can have a career. I understand all those things. I just think that we can't act like we're surprised when the football's moved and we're Charlie Brown falling on our butts yet again when Stephen A. is at his core just doing what Stephen A. does every day.
See, I'm telling you, he is definitely a provocateur, but I don't think this was provocateuring. I think this was just tell the truth about Memphis.
And maybe it is. You know, maybe, my God, maybe somebody told him, yeah, I'm out on Memphis. And if that's the case, I would love to know who it was and in what context.
What do you think of Memphis?
Memphis is what Memphis is. Like, it's a city that, yeah, I think, look, I lived in Germantown before Germantown was a fancy spot in Nashville. And I remember deciding I needed to move out of Germantown when literally somebody got shot in my front yard. And I was like, okay, I can't live over here anymore, so I'm going to move to the nice part of town. Again, this is all, you know, around, what, 2000. A nice part of town. I'm going to move over to East Nashville because that's up and coming. And then I remember wedding day, couldn't get to my house because the SWAT team had shut down my street to shut down the drug dealer across the street from me. I have lived in parts of Nashville that just aren't safe. And, and that's what we perceive of Memphis. I haven't spent enough time in the rest of Memphis to know what Memphis is really like. Like, I don't know, man. Like, is the crime rate atrocious? Yeah, probably. But does the crime rate compare to Chicago and New York? I don't know. Like, I don't know it. And I don't talk enough to people that live in there. And you know this in Nashville. Like, the stereotypes perpetuated of what Nashville is, how much of that is real and how much of that isn't? Like, how much is what people think living in Nashville is like compared to what it's like if you live in Hendersonville or if you live in Bellevue or if you live, you know, in Hundred Oaks? Like, all of those, like, it's a different experience in each of those places. So I don't know. You know me well enough. We've been friends long enough. You know, I'll always say, I don't know. That's why Stephen A. is rich and I'm not. So I don't know. I don't think of Memphis as being a beacon of safety and all things. But I think at some level, when you make the money that NBA players make, I do believe rich people can live however they want in pretty much any city in America.
Jason Fitz, last one for you, Fitz, before we let you go. I believe that the WNBA players are jealous of Caitlin Clark. And then I saw Monica McNutt this morning on ESPN say that if somebody said jealousy, she was going to go nuts. How can we interpret this anti-Caitlin Clark? I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. This anti-Caitlin Clark attitude. How can we interpret this as anything but jealousy when she's proven she can play? She's proven that she's great for the league. She's proven that she's box office. And yet every game it feels like there's somebody out there trying to cheap shot her.
You know, I didn't see the clip. I'm surprised to hear Monica say that. Genuinely. Because I think there has to be some level. Like, I only wonder is she splitting hairs in this? Like, I've talked to some WNBA former players that have said, you know, it's not about jealousy. It's about sending a message of like, hey, you got to earn your way into this, which to me screams the same thing as jealousy. At some point you protect what matters. You know what I mean? Like, how often have we all, like, you see certain people and you're like, hey, this person is the reason we all come here. This is the person, like, there's a reason why if I was sitting on ESPN today, I genuinely probably wouldn't say the things I just said about Stephen A, because you got to protect the person that makes you the most money. Like, I believe that we all sort of have to understand that. Like, when players are surprised that Mahomes gets different calls, I just laugh at it. Like, of course he gets different calls. He's Patrick Mahomes. Like, there are certain people in the music business, like, you go to play a concert, some people get, you know, some people get a better rider than others. So, like I said, it's just life is about what you bring to the table, and you're treated as such in 99% of businesses. So I agree with you. I think it's a bad look for the W, though. Like, this, at some point, the entire league, a league that I do think has, right, so much opportunity for momentum right now, the story should not be the clobbering of Caitlin. The story should be the rise of Paige Beckers, right? Like, that's another superstar that's come into the league that has the opportunity to try and continue to be transcendent. Like, Juju's going to come in a year, and that's going to be another superstar. Like, at some point, we got to stop, not we, but the players within the league have to stop trying to tear down somebody and start realizing that if they have their Michael Jordan, then you use your Michael Jordan to try and elevate the platform of the league, which at the end of the day is good for everybody. Like, they want to be at the negotiating table when their CBA is up this fall. They expect to be at the negotiating table. It's stupid for every one of the people in that union not to realize that they will have more money to play with when they do that CBA because of Caitlin Clark. So stop trying to damage the very thing that is making everybody profits.
Jason Fitz, Yahoo Sports, Fox Sports Radio. Great stuff, Fitz. We will talk soon.
Appreciate you, brother. Have a great week.
Yep, Fitz on the program. The Predators made a minor trade today. I have a thought on that. And I also have a warm-up for Jared versus Joe, because Joe said something that is ridiculous. And I will let you in the text line at 615-737-1025 pick. Which do you want? Do you want the take on the trade, or do you want the take on what Joe said? We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063 The Game.
It's a great question, LD. My answer would be because Jared likes Barry and has him on his show every week and can't speak on this topic with intellectual honesty, so he's going to be a total bobo about it.
All right, that was Joe Rex Road today. The question was, LD from McMinnville called Robbie in Rex Road and said, why is Jared giving the time. Why is Jared saying we have to give Barry Trotz time? Can we play the LD from McMinnville call? This is what LD from McMinnville said. He called in to Robbie and Joe this morning, and here was Robbie's reaction. You heard what Joe said, which is that Jared covers for Barry Trotz because he comes on the show. Play the cut.
First off, I know nothing about hockey, so that's kind of the reason why I'm calling. Yesterday, I heard Jared talk about giving time to the general manager and the young players to develop. So why would there not be grace given to the Titans general manager and young players? It seems like it's more, hey, they need to succeed now or the general manager's out versus, hey, let's give Trotz more time because players have to develop. And like I said, I know nothing about hockey, so I'm leaning on you guys. I appreciate it. Good to talk to you. See you guys.
Thank you, LD. Appreciate it. I would say this. I heard Jared yesterday talking. I think 2028 was the year that he threw out there that he's giving Barry Trotz still. Yeah,
cool.
We were talking back and forth, and he was like, general managers get forever in this league. I was like, well, I mean, the average for general managers in the league is, I think, 4.79 years. And
all right,
the
stop it there.
Actually did.
Okay, so the numbers you just heard right there. First of all, the first guy's like, I know nothing about hockey, but why? They're very different. When you draft a guy in the NFL, you're drafting a guy 3 years removed from high school who's played college football. When you're drafting in hockey, you're drafting somebody at 18. Number two, again, what were the numbers Robbie said? Jared said give Trotz until 2028. Trotz took over the job in 2023. Robbie then said the average time for a general manager is 4.79 years. David Reed. Let's round up to five. If Barry Trotz took the job in 2023, what is 5 years from 2023?
According to my Murray County math, that would be 2028.
There you go. So it's not crazy. And then again, can we play Joe's response one more time? And this was Joe's take on why, again, I say give time to the hockey GM and not the football GM.
It's a great question, LD. My answer would be because Jared likes Barry and has him on his show every week and can't speak on this topic with intellectual honesty, so he's going to be a total bobo about it.
Oh, my God. That is offensive. Now, it's offensive. I'm not really offended. But I have to fire back on this. Here's the difference between the two. Number one, they're different sports. Again, in hockey, you are drafting guys that you know will not play for your team for 4 or 5 years, and you're drafting guys whose primes are about 10 years away. In the NFL, unless it's a quarterback, their prime is not 10 years away. Secondly, Ram Carthon was completely incompetent, period. The only defense of Ram Carthon was that he wasn't given time to make it worse. Ram Carthon was so incompetent that the guy whom he hired to work for him came in and has pretty much almost immediately undone everything he did. Oh, yeah, that right tackle that you drafted to play left tackle, we're moving him back to right tackle. Oh, yeah, that quarterback you drafted in the second round, yeah, we're going to draft another quarterback because he sucks. Ram took a team that was a ref's call, the Josh Dobbs interception, fumble, whatever you want to call it, that was a legit bounce of the ball away from the playoffs and turned them into the worst team in the NFL. Barry Trotz has been general manager for 2 years. He made the playoffs once. And the biggest mistake that he ever made might have been making the playoffs. Because then he went out and signed the old pawpaws and it didn't work out this past year. But again, it's not as if he's had every opportunity and we've seen the guys he's drafted play in the NHL. We haven't. It takes longer in hockey. It's just a reality. And this past year was a disaster. Make no mistake about it. And the Soros contract, you know I don't like that. I told him I don't like that. And I think Burnett's lost the room. And I think Trotz is too stubborn not to fire him. But there is no comparison. And there is no competition between Rand Carthon, who slept in his office and made promises he couldn't keep and declarations that weren't true, to Barry Trotz. Rand Carthon ran Mike Vrabel out, and outside of Jarvis Brownlee, I'm not sure he made a single good decision in 2 years. Again, was last year a disaster for Trotz? Absolutely. Does he have to get it right with the fifth pick? Of course. But for Joe to argue that it's because Trotz comes on the show, when every week Trotz came on the show last year and we asked him about firing the coach, and we asked him about the terrible goalie contract, and we asked him, I mean, I remember the trade deadline. The interview we had the day of the trade deadline after Luke Shin got dealt to Winnipeg for a second-round pick, and I remember it was uncomfortable. And you're saying that I think the guy deserves more time because he comes on the show? That's a joke. He deserves more time because he's better than Rand Carthon, because Rand Carthon was so bad that he set the bar so insanely low. Intellectual dishonesty. Rand Carthon was a freaking joke. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, Joe joins us next for Jared versus Joe. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 for the game.